This is the John Clayton Show
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Get in on the conversation at 866-979-ESPN. Now, here's your host,
the professor,
John Clayton.
Mariner baseball at the top of the hour with the pregame, and of course, Dave Grosby joining us at the bottom of the hour. Let's go to Jet in Seattle. Hey, Jet.
Dr. John, how am I doing today?
I don't know. You tell me, because the big trade happened this week.
Well, what am I supposed to think of all of this? I'm in a quandary, and I need some guidance.
Okay, well, I mean, I think it was totally expected. It was just a matter of what value they were going to get, and they didn't get anything this year pretty much as a sixth-round pick, a 2-4 next year. So you can see the strategy is that Joe Douglas is trying to build up for the next 2 years, because next year's draft's going to be better than this year because of all the guys who went back and had that extra senior year and all those different things. But, it's like a bit interesting, but he couldn't pull a first, couldn't pull a second, couldn't even pull a third.
Yeah, but, as we were saying, I was worried last week that they may not even be able to get a third for him. They may very well just hang on to him and then let him go by free agency or something and get the compensatory pick. I was happy at least they were able to get a second out of it. And I have absolutely no trouble getting a deferred compensation for draft picks for next year instead, because, as you mentioned, I think it's going to be a stronger draft, maybe not for quarterbacks, but I think overall there's going to be more strength and depth in the draft next year. And, he's building up capital. I mean, geez, he's got, two firsts this year, two firsts next year, two seconds next year, two thirds this year. You know, there's some serious draft capital.
Well, I think
there.
What is it, 21 picks over the next 2 years?
Yep. I think he's got, 10 this year and 11 next year.
Yeah.
But the key is, I mean, about half of them are in the first three rounds.
Right, exactly.
So, it's not the Miami Dolphins, but it's darn close. So I'm not happy that they traded Darnold. All right, I guess that's why I'm hoping you're going to still put some salve on that wound, because I know you've been championing that trade mostly for financial purposes, and I think when it really came push came to shove, it was a financial decision perhaps more than anything else, because I just really am not totally convinced that these new guys are bringing anything, except for Trevor Lawrence, which isn't available,
right,
is really bringing anything much better than what Darnold has right now, especially when you read what they're saying. Well, Zach Wilson can, throw on the run. He can make plays. He can throw these cross-body passes. Well, Darnold has done all that in the NFL. So he has the same basic skill set, except, he's 3 years ahead in the salary scale. So.
Yeah, but that's the thing, because, you can see that by making this decision, one, they like Zach Wilson, and then number two, they weren't going to put the fifth-year option on him, because now under the new CBA, the fifth-year option is different, because before you can put him on, and then you get to, say, February, and you decide, you know what, we want to take the fifth-year option off. Now, if you put the fifth-year option on this year for next year, then it's guaranteed.
Yeah, that's a big difference. Obviously, that's a big difference. But again, if Darnold does pan out, I mean, you've got another starting quarterback for 18. That's, that in today's market, that's not all that bad.
No, that's not bad. And that's why Carolina's decided, okay, we'll make this move. They preferred to get Deshaun Watson, but that situation is too messy. So they pulled out of any thought of that. Because, again, Houston wasn't going to do anything, and so they just gave up and said, okay, let's make the next move. Let's go for Darnold, and they've already made the two-year commitment because they're going to put the fifth-year option on him.
Yeah. Well, I think they have no choice, because otherwise it's a foolish pick if they don't at least give him 2 years to soak. Much like the whole Leonard Williams deal with the Giants. I mean, you're kind of committed to, re-signing them. Otherwise, it's just a wasted effort.
Right.
I don't know. I'm sad to see Darnold go. I liked him, and I think he's going to succeed in the NFL. He just needs to be in a better system, and I think he will succeed. But I think ultimately where my frustration lies in thinking about all this is I'm just tired of the chronic resets every 3 years, every 4 years. We're rebuilding, we're resetting. Well, why is that? Well, because the GM's messed up, consistently, time and again. I mean, we've traded six number one picks. you can't win, or you can't build an organization by constantly trading your number one picks. And the real frustrating part of it is, it's not as if these number one picks sucked.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, these guys are top-notch NFL players, as it's turned out, and you're unloading them. So, you know, at some point, you've got to, you know, put your foot in the sand and say, that's it. This is where we're starting, and now we're moving forward. And now we're building from here. And it gets frustrating. It gets frustrating. And, you know, it's the same story, you know, every 3 years or so. You know, we've got to put an awful lot of faith in Joe Douglas, and I'm willing to do that more so certainly than Idzik. We knew that was
a problem. Yeah, Idzik was terrible.
And that was ridiculous. And then, you know, McKagan was a question mark from the get go, and that hiring process really was just, you know, a clown show, quite frankly. So I will have some faith in Douglas, and I like the fact that he brought in his own coach at this point in time. You know, I'm really glad that Gaze did not survive, and I'm not sure why he survived as long as he did. But it gets old, John. It gets tiring. And, you know, I just hope, I'm really worried that Wilson is going to be brittle. We're getting another Chad Pennington. And, you know, he doesn't have a whole lot of, you know, tape, hasn't played against top-notch competition. You know, it's a real big crapshoot here. And I much would have liked to have seen him, you know, keep Darnold, jump down, and build a team around whoever is going to be the quarterback. You know, because at that point, if you got a solid infrastructure around a quarterback, you don't necessarily need the best kid in the room.
Mm-hmm. But
so it's frustrating. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, because, again, you're right about the fact that all they're doing is constantly resetting.
Yeah. It's been a chronic rebuild for over a decade now. I mean, basically since 2010, after that second, you know, the second of the two AFC championship games, mm-hmm. it's pretty much been a rebuild. And it's old. It's old. But, you know, I guess we just got to have faith. And I will say the nice thing is things are looking better in that regard than they have been in the last 10 years, because I think we do have people in the positions of power that have a vision. You know, and that's one thing I was impressed about, how they went about free agency this year. They were obviously targeting certain players and targeting certain types of players. And by that, more so, I mean on defense. And that just goes to show, it tells me that, you know, they've got a vision for where they want to go. And they obviously don't have the personnel on the team, but they've got an idea as to where they want to go and what they want to do, as opposed to just, you know, throwing money around with, you know, buckshot precision and hoping that they can land somebody. Oh, we need a linebacker. Well, hopefully we can fill this guy in this spot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, like, why are you getting Avery Williamson and Mosley, both on, you know, substantial free agent contracts? They don't fit together. You know, that was part of the problem with McKagan, is he had no concept of building a team and building, you know, the component parts that fit well together. You know, you're not getting offensive linemen that work into whatever blocking scheme you're going to have, one, because you're changing the blocking scheme every year. You know, I mean, Carpenter's about the only one that really panned out in that whole mishmash. But you just, one hand doesn't know what the other is doing. And that was part of the problem as things digressed with Tannenbaum and Ryan. And then it just was ridiculous with Ryan and Idzik. And there was just no communication between McKagan and Bowles. And he had no idea what they were doing on offense from moment to moment, yet alone year to year.
Right.
But now I think at least there's a plan in place. There's a vision in place. And I think everybody is walking in the same direction. And I think that's just a huge, you know, a huge improvement. But it gets old, John.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, I mean, you saw that thing for so many years in Tampa, Jacksonville. I mean, what's the similarity of all these bad teams? You know, they're constantly changing coaches, constantly rebuilding, and not doing well.
Exactly. And what's the keys? For example, you take a team like the Steelers. You know, even when they don't have the best of talent on their roster, maybe it's a little bit of a down year, you still have the continuity, and they're still able to succeed. You know, certainly be better than a mediocre team, you know, to be a top-flight team. Why? Because you have the continuity. And you have the infrastructure in place that you've built with your players so that everybody kind of fits the system. And even as people get hurt or, you know, moving forward, this year's a classic example. Look at all the linebackers they lost.
Yeah.
But yet they were still able to put a decent product out on the field because they were able to compensate, move things around, because everybody is kind of built to move in the same direction as opposed to just, you know, throwing two middle linebackers out there and hoping one can play the outside. It's hopefully it's a new dawn, but it's really sad. I'm really sad to see Darnold go.
Yeah, but hey, it was inevitable. I mean, you know, once they started to have all the workouts and everything else, and once you can see that, okay, they like Zach Wilson, and that's going to be the guy, and so now they have to try to do the best. But what do you think they do for a veteran quarterback?
Well, I thought that was interesting that they brought in Hoyer for an interview. I mean, that's going to be an important – that's going to be a real important signing, because they're certainly going to need somebody to help, you know, mentor the new quarterback.
Right.
And I thought Hoyer was interesting.
But they haven't signed him yet, have they?
No. No, they haven't, which I thought was also kind of interesting. But, you know, obviously he's got a lot of information regarding what's going on up further up in, up north in New England. But, you know, I don't know if McDowell wants to come back again at 42, but that would also be an interesting hire. But that's going to be an important one. And I think in some regards, I think you need somebody who's got a better mindset and perhaps a better mentoring ability than talent at this point to bring in, because it's not as if you're really hoping that he's going to play a whole lot.
Right.
But you're hoping that he's going to provide a lot more in the film room, you know, on the sidelines, you know, and much as McNown did, he did an incredible job with Darnold. So, you know, I'm hoping that they can bring in somebody like that as opposed to, and I don't know if he's good or not in this capacity, but Alex Smith,
right,
who is healthy talent-wise, is probably the best of the bunch out there. But I have no idea what his mentoring capabilities are.
Oh, no, it's great.
Mentoring
it's one of the best. I mean, I know one of the coaches in Kansas City told me, or no, actually it was Greg Roman in San Francisco, said that he makes the best quarterback room because he'll come in, and they did the same thing with Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. Taught him just about everything, from what time to get there to what to do. Hey, Jet, got to run.
All right. Well, take care, John, and it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to James in Burien. Hey, James.
Oh, yes, hi. John?
Yes.
You know, first of all, I just want to make this short and clear here. I just appreciate everything you do for everybody here in the Seattle area. I just feel as though you're an asset. And you bring so much light and so much perspective on everybody here. I think you just—I just want to give—I just want to give you your due. I feel as though you get your credit. And I just want to say thank you for everything you do, everything you've done, and you roll with the punches. And you definitely, there's no quitting you, and you're a trooper, soldier, all the way.
I appreciate that. Thank you for the kind words.
Thank you so much. I just continue
yes.
what you're doing, and I just look forward to everything you do. Thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Okay.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Bob in Mount Vernon. Hey, Bob.
Hey, how's it going, John?
Good. How are you?
Haven't talked to you in a while. Did you have a good date night with Pat last night?
Sure did, yeah. She really liked it.
That's good. Yeah, I got a question that's been running around people's heads probably now since the person was drafted. I saw him play at San Diego State. He was an awesome running back, but he is not cut it for the Hawks. And with the down, with only the few number of draft picks they have, I know how much the staff believes that he can turn it around, but it's been a little bit too long in turning around, and plus we have some other guys coming up that look like they can actually fill a number two role or a three role out of the back or third down route out of the backfield. I think it's time to take Mr. San Diego State and trade him, and hopefully
yeah, but what are you going to get in return for Rashad Penny?
I would take a draft pick, John.
What round?
I would take a third or a fourth.
Can't get it. There's no way. Impossible.
Well, I don't know. There might be some teams in the
no
for running backs.
No, but think about this. You just watched Sam Darnold, right? One of the top picks in the draft.
Yeah,
and so to get trade value, they had to take a sixth-round pick this year and a second and a four next year, and you're talking about a quarterback because you're now getting to the point that he's just going to be a one-year rental because what happens is, you know, he's getting close to when he gets the fifth-year option, and, you know, now the fifth-year option's guaranteed. And, you know, knowing he's had the knee injuries and everything else, what are you going to do there?
Well, John, I really like I was questionable at the pick, but I actually had seen the guy play at San Diego State for his full season. And he was awesome. And he has shown some brilliance a couple of times. His movements, but his injury, we have to work harder somehow at keeping a running back. I mean, nobody in the NFL is not going to get hurt because they could get stepped on their foot or their leg or what have you, but something has to be done to keep those guys upright for the games down the road. Because when you're going, if we drop our main running back, goes down, and we have to depend on Rashard Penny or, I'm even pretty high back up on Alex Collins again. I'm not sure how the Hawks are, but when they cut him and he went back to Baltimore and did 1,000 yards, you know, and then he became part of a three or four back set when they got Gus Williams and whoever else they got.
Hey, remember they had Mark Ingram too.
I thought that was great. Yeah.
But again, you're not going to get a third or fourth round pick. I mean, if you're talking about at the very best, and also it's like, what are you going to get? Maybe a sixth or a seventh. That's it.
No, that's true. That's true too, John. I guess what I'm basically saying is, I myself think it would be more adventurous, or it would be more towards the Seahawks to get a draft pick. And if it's a fifth or sixth, and they don't get anything besides that, they have something that they can build on. They have,
but then they'd have to get another running back.
They could probably do it in the draft, John.
They only have three choices right now. And so what you're talking about is that now you have to come back and use up another resource and a draft choice, and you know, not necessarily work on other positions. I mean,
or they can sign a free agent too.
Not many left. And what do you want, Todd Gurley with his bad knee?
No way. No thanks. There's a couple of guys out there. They're not all stars. They're not Pro Bowlers, but they're consistent, and they're more consistent than what Penny is.
Well, again, I mean, when Penny was healthy, he looked good.
Pollard. I'm sorry, John. Go ahead.
Yeah, when he's healthy, he did well. I mean, the problem is he blew out his knee.
And if it's not one thing, it's another. And with knees, I know. I was in the United States Army for 13 and a half years. I jumped out of perfectly good airplanes. And when your knee goes, or you tear a meniscus or an ACL, I know what it's all about. And I know that those guys have the best rehabbing and doctors in the world. I'm just trying to get my head around what, you know, it said he even added weight this year, which I believe it was a Times thing that he put on, Seattle Times. It said he was put up to 230 now or 225.
Well, that was actually his rookie year. And then he lost the weight.
Oh, that was actually, this was only a couple weeks ago, but anyways, that's my thoughts. I know we agree to disagree on this, John, but I'm glad that your show is back on, and like the previous caller, I'm glad that you are still here and are doing a great job for the Northwest. You know, I was stationed down in Fort Lewis when you were working for the Tacoma News Tribune. I read your articles every day. I've listened to you on the radio, and you are a gem to the Emerald City.
Hey, I thank you so much.
I appreciate your work.
Thank you.
You take it easy, John.
Okay, great. Coming up next, our weekly dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby.
This is the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Time for our weekly dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. And so, David, we're well into baseball season now that the basketball season's over. We still have the Masters this weekend. And, of course, Mariners, top of the hour, taking on the Minnesota Twins. 3-4 is the record of this team. Pitching's a problem. Hitting has been a problem. Is there a problem?
Yeah, injuries have been a problem,
yeah,
John.
I think the big takeaway
is the fact that James Paxton gone. I mean, literally pitched what the two batters or three? But he had anything?
24 pitches or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. And it's typical Mariner luck that it couldn't just be a pulled muscle or something. No, he needs Tommy John. He's done for the season, and he'll be back in 2022 if then. So I think that really hurt. I think, Marco Gonzalez's last two starts have not been very good. I think that stands out a little bit. But there have been some bright signs. But I think kind of the injuries have sort of overshadowed everything.
Yeah, no doubt, because, Kyle Lewis has been hurt. You look at it overall, it's like
yep.
The hitting has been very spotty so far.
Very much so, John. I mean, I think the things that when we talked about it during the spring
yeah.
is one of the things you kind of hoped for these guys would be that they would have a little bit of pressure taken off their hitting because they're going to have some pretty good starting pitching, and they did have some veterans coming back, and Mitch Haniger, thumbs up. I mean, has managed to be playing and has managed to look okay. The spotty stuff you're kind of expecting from the other guys. 3-4 could be a lot worse in all fairness. So it's not a bad start, but you just don't get the feel, you just get that, I don't know how to describe it, that bad luck feeling that the Mariners unfortunately have been living under for 20 years just kind of feels like that cloud is still on top of them.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, because they can't seem to catch a break. And, they just had, and the injury thing is just, unbelievable, because again, it's like they're starting to look like the Yankees as far as like last year with all the Yankee injuries and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like every day somebody comes down with some kind of a leg injury or whatever.
Well, one huge difference, of course, between the Mariners and the Yankees is the Yankees have depth in their
yeah.
in their system, and the Mariners do not. And that was always the the risk that you're running when you're kind of doing a rebuild is. If you're not particularly deep and you have a year where some of those top prospects can't come back and play well, and we know what Kyle Lewis has, I'm not trying to sing bad songs, but that sort of hamstring thing can be bothersome an entire year. Fraley's got the same thing. I mean,
mm-hmm.
It can kind of mess with you the entire year if you're a ball player. So, I guess we're still waiting. And I saw was the headlines of the Times on Jared Kelenic when he's going to be brought up, which is not going to be any time particularly soon. And that was another part of the story, him in the spotlight because of the comments that were made. And then you all knew if he had a great spring, he was going to get a chance to probably make the team. And then he got hurt in spring too. So it's 3-4, but it just feels like that cloud is around. And hopefully, they're coming home for a few. They can play better then.
Yeah, no doubt. What do you think about the remainder of this? It's been strange so far with a Friday off for the Mariners. That's mm-hmm. unusual.
Friday off and then, what was it, Easter? Or mm-hmm. excuse me, the first Sunday off. Yeah,
they've had
the schedules. And that's part of, the leftovers from dealing with the pandemic and whatnot. So the schedule is not exactly set the way it's supposed to be, although it seems to be settling down now into something that looks more familiar to all of us. And that's kind of what we're hoping for, is to get things to look familiar again.
Yeah, no doubt. Didn't get a chance to talk to you about Gonzaga. What was your thought on that loss?
Well, geez, it was something. We talked about that win, which was one of the great games. And I do think, John, that the takeaway from this NCAA tournament is not going to be Gonzaga lost. It's not
yeah.
going to be that Baylor won the tournament. The takeaway 10 or 15 years from now, much like it was, that great classic Christian Laettner game between Duke and Kentucky, that wasn't for the championship. you know, that was a lead-in game. And much like that, I think the Gonzaga-UCLA game is going to be what's remembered from this particular NCAA tournament. But to answer your question, I think that they ran up against a better team. And I'm not really one who buys into the fact that they were resting on their laurels or were worn out after the game on Saturday. I have a funny feeling. Remember, these guys were supposed to play during the regular season. And I think Gonzaga had with a team that had some COVID issues, and they had to cancel it a couple of hours before the game was played. I think Baylor probably would have beaten them that time. I think that the way they matched up against them was problematic for Gonzaga, and they were able to exploit it. Now, certainly, the Bulldogs didn't have their best game, but that was a team that was not a good matchup for them. So I think Baylor would have beaten them more times than not. Doesn't change the fact, though, that it was a terribly disappointing way to end an undefeated season. And to highlight the fact that going undefeated in college basketball now and winning the tournament is virtually impossible.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, and you're right about that, because, you know, that December 5th game, Baylor might have won that. And, you know, you give credit for Gonzaga for going out there and playing a tough schedule, particularly out of division. But, of course, their conference is just so easy to win.
It is, but, you know, I mean, they get one challenge. And in recent years, it's been St. Mary's. In the last couple of years, it's been BYU. And, you know, this year, it's funny, you know, in the WAC tournament, or the West Coast Conference tournament, forgive me, they were down by, I think, 8 points at halftime. So mm-hmm. they really got exactly what they needed, you know, a challenge in that tournament. So, look, they got this is an easy thing for me to say. I'm not a part of the program, and I didn't just lose in the championship game, but they got to shake it off. I mean, they are preseason number one for next year as well. This is Gonzaga now. This is the most remarkable machine in college basketball. They're going to be favored to win it again next year, and we'll have a legitimate shot at it next year if they can overcome, you know, the hangover of this year. And it was, you just felt disappointed for them because Baylor just came out flying, and it was just a bummer. It wasn't a better game. You know, it would have been nice if it was a better game, and it just was no contest.
Well, one of the stories I keep hating to bring up, but I hope that now it's officially dead, is the Russell Wilson story, because Carlos Dunlap came out a couple times this week and says, hey, he talked to Russell, and Russell, he thinks, is going to be here for several years. Brandon Marshall, who is, you know, chiming that you know, Russell was going to be out of here at some point, now has come back and doubled back and said, no, Russell's going to be there for some time. Do you think we can officially put the Russell Wilson story behind us?
Until he says something specific about it, or, you know, you hear the Seahawks management, which they haven't yet, say something specific about it, I think the story will linger. I just think it will. I mean, it's you know this job better than anyone. If you got a chance to have a story like that hang out and hang on, it'll hang on. So until we hear him say something otherwise, you know, I think that people will still be wondering. I think you and I, of course, are simpatico with this. This was never going to happen this year, no matter what.
No.
No matter what, it was never going to happen. So, you know, whether it happens beyond this year, you know, it may impact, you know, what Pete Carroll's final decisions are in terms of how much longer he's going to want to stay and coach. You know, because I think, you know, look, as much as we know who's got the actual power, you know, you tell me, John, if a franchise quarterback isn't the most powerful guy in an organization. I mean, he's certainly one of the top two or three, depending on the organization. And if you get into a contest of it's me or him, in a lot of cases, you stick with the franchise quarterback. So I'm not saying that's going to be something that's coming up down the line. It might be. You know, we'll see what they look like this year. It's obvious there's a lot of pressure on them to play well this year. And I don't know why they wouldn't. They were 12-4 last year.
Right.
They had a good year in free agency. They brought back a lot of talent. I think that there's no reason to think that they're not the best team in this division right now. And there's a lot of time to go on before the division starts playing football. But, you know, I don't know why we wouldn't look at them as a double-digit win team again this year with a shot at the Super Bowl. I mean, it's a great thing here in Seattle.
It really is, and that's
don't
the thing.
Get tired of winning.
No, and that's the thing. If like a Russell Wilson trade would have put them in a 2 or 3 year rebuilding program, because now
if
what you're
they're lucky, John. That's only if you luck out and you get a quarterback.
Yeah.
You know that. I mean, Russell Wilson was you know, we forget when he came. I mean, he wasn't the savior when he came. Matt Flynn was. They got Matt Flynn from the Packers. He was going to be the quarterback, and Russell Wilson was drafted in the third round. So, you know, I mean, and he winds up, they hit the lottery with him. So just to assume that they could get one of those young quarterbacks, oh, well, let's get one of those young guys, they'll be good, is crazy, because they're not.
Well, particularly, too, it's like, it's like any Russell Wilson trade. I mean, the Jets weren't going to trade the second pick in the draft, and the Jets is a team that, even according to his ridiculous agent, that he wasn't really interested because, he had the four teams, and two of them were, it was just bad choices and all that stuff. But the Jets weren't going to give up the second pick in the draft. And here's a draft that you're going to probably have five quarterbacks go either at the worst in the top 15. So now what you're talking about is a big drop-off after that. So it's like, the Stanford quarterback and all the other quarterbacks are going to be there. It's like you're not going to find a way to replace them. And next year's draft for quarterbacks is supposed to be pretty bad.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, it's just that there's one thing, there's the sure thing, and then there's the unknown. And whether or not the best quarterback in this draft is the first one taken, or maybe it's someone in later rounds taken. Who knows? Pat Mahomes wasn't the first quarterback taken in his draft, and he was certainly the best one in that draft. So, it's just when the bird in the hand in the NFL is having a quarterback who you don't have to worry about, and you do whatever it takes to keep him. And that's why I don't think, like you didn't think, the Seahawks were even entertaining anything like that this year and would rather not in the years to come.
Yeah, and of course, the one stat that kind of interesting is like when RG3 came into the league, he just had three times between when RG3 came in and Andrew Luck came in 2012 to 2016 that quarterbacks went 1-2. And the six quarterbacks that went during those three-year periods, none are with the teams that drafted them. None.
Yeah.
Zero.
Yeah. There's no guarantees when you let go, when you don't have a sure thing. And the Seattle Seahawks and Russell Wilson have a sure thing and have a sure thing for I think, a decade to go.
Yeah, no doubt. So what's on the Graz schedule this week?
You talked about it at the start. It's the one of the 4 weeks of the year you watch golf, and it's a beautiful day at the Masters and definitely enjoying that and kind of hoping the Seahawks can pull out of their funk a little bit.
Oh, no doubt. We'll see about that.
The Mariners.
The Mariners, yeah. We'll see, and that's going to be at the top of the hour. This is our weekly dose of the Graz with Dave Grosby. David, have yourself a great weekend. Enjoy the golf.
John, we'll talk next week, buddy. Thank you.
All right, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Our thanks to Matt Nelson for producing the show. Our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. We'll have Mariner baseball pregame at the top of the hour. Let's go to Cody in Chelan. Hey, Cody.
Hey, how's it going, John?
Good, Cody.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I love the show. Last week I read an article by Jake Heaps that brought up an interesting point and highlighted the good problem that the Seahawks have with all of our depth in the safety room right now.
Yeah.
And it kind of got me thinking about how we can get as many of these guys on the field as possible, because some of them have really flashed in limited play time. And I know that we consider Jamal Adams kind of a positionless player, but do you think that the Hawks might ever use him more in an outside linebacker role to kind of get some of these other DBs on the field? Because I don't know, maybe it's just me thinking it, but it seems like it kind of plays more of his strength as a tackler and as a blitzer without kind of sacrificing a defensive back if he was seen more as an outside linebacker, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that you can see him did, and he did it a lot with Greg Williams with the Jets, is that, you go a little bit more three safety and, you have him kind of play that linebacker type of role, so he can do that. And I think they did some of it last year, because now, but you're right. I mean, here they have two Pro Bowl safeties because Quandre Diggs was selected to the Pro Bowl last year. Jamal Adams, obviously he's three times in the Pro Bowl. And then, there's going to be two linebackers. Now it's just a matter, do you go nickel and you have Marquise Blair that's there? And so, yeah, I think that there's sometimes they can do it, but not on a permanent basis because, again, they have Cody Barton. But when they go nickel and all that stuff, it's like it's going to be two linebackers. And the two linebackers, for the most part, unless they bring K.J. Wright back, I mean, you've got Jordan Brooks, and then you have Bobby Wagner.
Okay, yeah, I think that's good insight. I think it'll be interesting to see how they use him, because he'll have more of a full off season with them.
Right.
But I think they'll be able to be a little bit more creative this time.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's the thing. It's like,
take my call.
Yeah, and you still have a system that you like, which is cover one, cover three. But you know, particularly when you're taking on teams that'll have two tight ends, you need to vary it up a little bit. So you know, a two tight end set, and that's where he may play that extra role. More teams in the past year, and it's each year they're doing more of it, you know, go to the three safety set, just because, again, you get more speed. But the only problem with the three safety set is that you know, you tend to be a little bit lighter, and if they run the ball, that could be a problem. But again, Jamal Adams is so athletically good that he kind of neutralizes that a bit. That's why you kind of wonder, now that they got the Tyler Lockett deal done, that maybe they see if they can get something done with Jamal Adams on a long-term basis. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jake in Mercer Island. Hey, Jake.
Morning, John.
Morning.
Short question for you. Why isn't Jim Plunkett in the Pro Football Hall of Fame? Two-time Super Bowl winner, Super Bowl MVP. You know, he had an amazing career, up and down and sideways, but he finished like a champ.
He did, and it's just a matter that, you know, I guess the longevity of his success in Oakland certainly didn't translate in New England, but, you know, he's been close. Now, of course, he's in the senior category, and he hasn't been able to advance out of that. You know, I think it's very similar to Phil Sims. It's like, okay, as talented as he was, and there's no doubt he was a great talent, Jim Plunkett, but you know, just hasn't been enough votes. And sometimes what happens, we see it with the Steelers and all that stuff. I mean, you have enough Raiders that have made the Pro Bowl, I mean, made the Hall of Fame, and you know, it's like it's almost like an overdue. But again, it's like he's a consideration. Cliff Branch needs to get in there, but sometimes you just fall short. I mean, you know, we're, one thing in the Hall of Fame, and I know from voting since 1988, we're always playing catch-up. And so what happens is, when you're playing catch up like that, it's sometimes hard to get everybody over the top, because if you only have five slots, then you know, somebody's going to fall short.
Well, that's understood. But he was one tough dude, boy. Yeah. I watched that season in New England,
mm-hmm.
and he was
beat up.
It was a terrible team, and he got killed. Just got beat to death.
Well, and you know it from being a Raider fan and watching it. I mean, that first year that he was a Raider, he couldn't do too much because his body was still beat up.
Yep. Anyway, keep him in mind, John. Great show.
Okay, hey, thank you. Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not on the senior committee, so, and really, I never really had a chance to vote for Jim, because, you know, 88 was my start, and I think that, you know, he had already kind of passed. But again, overall, at some point, maybe he will get in, but again, it's going to be the seniors that are going to make that decision, and I'm not on that committee. I'm on the contributor committee. Fortunately, we had the success of getting Tom Flores in, which I thought was overdue, but again, we were able to get the coaching category, able to do all those positive things. Now, of course, Mariner baseball is coming up next, and of course, chance to go ahead and see if they can even this series against the Minnesota Twins. It's a three-game set, and of course, you know, with the game starting a little after 11 o'clock, and of course, you know, chance to see if they can right the wrong that happened on Thursday. Kind of still unusual to see a Friday off, but again, with the pandemic and everything else, it's just kind of a different ball game right now as far as, you know, the timing and getting everything done. But overall, chance to see Mariner baseball this early, which is good. And then, of course, the game tomorrow. So overall, thank you, everybody, for being on the show. And, of course, we will be back next Saturday, probably with a 3-hour show. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.